all my duties taken care of.
Mark chapter 10, verses 35 to 45. You see on your outline, I'm entitled the message for today, The Ungodly Quest for Power and Fame. The Ungodly Quest for Power and Fame. Mark chapter 10, verses 35 to 45. This account is also found in Matthew chapter 20. And there's one key additional piece of information in Matthew that's not found in Mark. We're going to see two brothers, James and John, the disciples of Jesus, come to him with a request. And we find in Matthew that their mom is in on this as well. That's a key piece of information that's in Matthew that you don't find in Mark. So let's begin reading verse 35 of chapter 10, the book of Mark. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come unto him, saying, Master, we would that thou shouldest do for us whatsoever we shall desire. Now, what's happening here? Have you ever come to someone and say, can I ask a favor of you? And you're really asking them to commit to granting you a favor before they know what you're asking, right? Would you do something for me? If you say yes, you don't know what you're agreeing to, right? And that's sort of the line that these two guys are coming to Jesus, and their mom is in on this. You can see in Matthew, they said, Master, we would ask you to do something that we desire. And what does Jesus respond in verse 36? Doesn't necessarily say, yes, I'll do you a favor. I'll do what you ask. He says, what is it that you want me to do? What would you that I should do for you? Verse 37, they said unto him, grant unto us that we may sit one on thy right hand and the other on thy left hand in thy glory. In other words, when you get to be king, you get to be the Messiah and you reign on your throne, ruling the earth, would you let us be your right-hand men? May one of us sit at your right hand, one at your left, and rule and reign with you. Verse 38, but Jesus said unto them, you know not what you ask. Can you drink of the cup that I drink of and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they said unto him, we can. And Jesus said unto them, you shall indeed drink of the cup that I drink of, and with the baptism that I am baptized with shall you be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared. Verse 41, and when the 10 heard it, who is the 10? The other 10 of the 12, right? The other 10 disciples heard what was going on here. When they caught wind of this little request that James and John had asked, they began to be much displeased with James and John. But Jesus called them to him and said unto them, you know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you. But whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister or your servant. And whosoever you will be the chiefest, or whosoever you wants to be the chiefest, he will be the servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. All of us have known people that we felt like wanted to be important. They wanted the chief place, if you're using biblical terms, in the synagogue perhaps. They wanted to be famous. They wanted to be powerful. They wanted to be known. They wanted to be seen as important. And we, over the years, society has, and people have come up with terms to describe those type of people. And I want you to help me think of some of those terms. Let me get you started with a few. We say that guy wants to be a big shot. Ever heard that statement before? Maybe said it. He wants to be a big shot. Or we might say this: she thinks she's Miss America. Okay? I'll tell a story on my wife. She knows exactly what I'm going to tell her. There's a lady in town that my wife thinks that lady thinks she's Miss America. Every time we see her, she said, boy, she thinks she's beautiful. She thinks she's Miss America. And she does kind of act like she thinks that. I can't disagree with her. We might say that person puts on airs. What are some other phrases that you have said or heard that describe such people? Thinks more highly of themselves than they ought. Did I see a hand over here? They think what? Oh, okay, that's a new one for me now. Okay, say it one more time. They think they're all that and a bag of chips. Okay. What's another one? Large and in charge. Okay, y'all been places I hadn't been. He thinks he's the man. Okay.
Thinks he's a legend in his own mind.
Legend in his own mind. King of the hill. King of the world. Who died and made you king?
Big shot.
Big shot. I've heard a couple that I'm not going to repeat. Y'all probably heard a few like that too. We have these terms. And here we see in the scripture two of Jesus' disciples that are behaving in such a manner, and they're with their mother. Now, I've got 4 or 5 points here you see on the outline. Let's run through these and see what we can see from this account in Mark chapter 10. Number one, those who grab at power and fame are often too blind to see their own ugly appearance. Those who grab at power and fame are often too blind to see their own ugly appearance. Can you see in your mind what this looks like? For two grown men to have their mom come to Jesus requesting that her grown sons be given special treatment. Somewhere along the way, she gets ugly. And somewhere along the way, they get ugly. There's an account of a totally different situation, but that reveals the same ugliness as we have seen before in Luke chapter 12, where a man comes to Jesus and ask Jesus a favor of Jesus. He says, Lord, would you speak to my brother that he would divide the inheritance with me? Now that's all that we know about the situation, but you can read between the lines and figure out that probably somewhere along the line, this fella expected an inheritance that he did not get. His brother got it. Now here's the thing. That fellow comes to Jesus publicly with other people around and blurts this out. Most of us have a little too much pride to do that publicly. There is something else going on in this man's mind that would compel him to do this just in front of everyone else. And it's a blindness that he has that he doesn't even see himself the way other people around him are seeing him. And it's the same way here with James and John and their mom. About 15 to 20 years ago, there was a picture in the local paper of two newborn babies. And you've seen pictures in the paper of newborn babies before, and it has the baby there and tells who their mom and dad is, and the brothers, sisters, and the grandparents, all this kind of stuff. And there they are. Well, Susan and I just vaguely know the family. And that's been 50, 20 years ago, and it seems to me like that about once a month since that day, those children have had their picture in the paper. For some reason, they cut their first tooth, they went to the doctor, just something. So much so that, you know, over the years, you know, Susan and I, have among ourselves, will make the comment, well, so-and-so got their picture in the paper again. Where does that come from? It's not the two kids putting their picture in the paper, is it? In this case, it's a grandma. A grandma who is promoting and seeking publicity for her grandchildren. We see this in a lot of other ways. Let me give you another example. You ever been to a young kids' ball practice? And I've heard stories over the years of how parents, it's not the kids who make fools of themselves, it's the parents. Parents arguing with the coach that their child should be the one playing. You know, and get irate over with other argue with either other parents or umpires or coaches or whatever over something promoting their children. And somewhere along the way, they get ugly. There are so many instances and different situations that this takes place and this happens. When I was a senior in high school, there was a guy named Robert Beard was the valedictorian of our class. And there was two girls that were very close in grade point average, and they were one of them was going to be the salutatorian. And I don't know how they do that nowadays, but back then, in order to get that person's picture in the yearbook, or to get things, you know, in order for the rest of the year, you know, that has to be figured out before the last week of school. It's got to be figured out around the first semester of your senior year. And usually it's not that close that it's an issue. But in my class, it was. And this one girl had the highest grade point, so she was number two. Well, by the end of the year, this third girl had taken some, what they call nowadays advanced placement classes, Back then they were not called that, but and so her grade, and made good grades in them. The other girl just coasting along with average classes. The third girl's grade point higher was higher than the second one at the end of the year. Well, the yearbook was already out, or close to being out. The second girl already had her speech wrote for the graduation ceremony. I mean, it was that close. And then this third girl's mom comes to the school. And guess what she does? She discusses with the superintendent this wrong that has been done her daughter. Now, whether that's wrong or not, the thing is, somewhere along the way, that mom became ugly. She didn't have to be ugly. She didn't have to raise her voice. She didn't have to yell and scream. She didn't have to throw a fit. There is something about self-promotion that is ugly, no matter how tactful it is. No matter how right your cause. And the kids in my class recognized it. No one had to tell them. We just knew there's something wrong with that picture. No matter how right her cause, there's something wrong about self-promotion. So here we see that. James and John's mom comes desiring something for her sons. Number two, those who grab at power and fame are often seen by others as greedy and covetous. I want to ask you a question. Is a competitive spirit a virtue or a vice? Okay, I consider myself a fairly competitive person. If I play a game, I play to win. If I have to cheat, I'll cheat. It doesn't really matter. The end justifies the means, right? Okay, I'm fairly competitive, whether it's playing sports, playing cards, playing some mind game or whatever it may be, working a crossword puzzle, just brings that out. Is that wrong? Okay, I don't think so. I think it's like several things can be. It can be a healthy thing, but it can end up being used in a wrong way. I mean, eating is a good thing. Eating potato chips for three meals a day every day is probably not that good. Competitive, being competitive. Suppose that I, and you tell me along the way here when this gets ugly. Suppose I decide I'm going to take up bowling. So I take up bowling. Set aside the more strenuous sports and go to the old guy's sport, bowling. And I get pretty good at bowling. And I bowl 250, you know, 275 or whatever, and I'm just a pretty good bowler. And the local paper has, a sports section in it that they have pictures of this and that and so on. And the bowling league has results for the bowling league, and here's one week that I bowl two or three perfect games. And maybe someone else, has a good bowling week. And they have this person's picture in the paper and telling their results, but I'm nowhere to be found. And so I call up the paper and ask them, Hey, I bowled 2 perfect games. Why was I not mentioned in the paper? Okay. When did that get ugly? When I made the call, right? It's one thing to be competitive and just want to win in whatever it is. It's something entirely different to want to be recognized for your achievements. To want the fame, to want the recognition that comes with achieving something. And that's where we get out of place, I think. Number 3, those who grab at power and fame often have an inflated understanding of their own abilities. What did Jesus ask James and John here? Are you able, you want to sit with me on the right hand and one on the left and rule with me? Are you able to drink the cup that I must drink? What was that cup? You tell me. To bear the sins of the world. Suffering, right? Suffering and death. Are you able to bear, to drink this cup that I must drink? Did they know what cup he was talking about? Did they know what he was talking about? I don't think they did. They should have. We've just, I think last week or a week or two ago, Jesus tells it again. You've heard me say this, I don't know how many times, just as we're going through the book of Mark. How many times Jesus tells them that he must die and that I must be mistreated and killed by the crucified? And he asks them, are you able to drink the cup? You want to rule with me? Are you able to take or to do what is required? And they say, we are able. Are you able to be baptized with the baptism that I must be baptized with? Yes, we can. They are wanting the power. They are wanting the fame. They're wanting the position. And think that they are able to do whatever is required to do it. Or whatever he asks of them. And yet, just a few short weeks later, what do they do? When the time comes to drink of the cup, where are they at? They are fleeing for their life. They are hiding. They are fleeing. They're running. They are not able. Number 4, those who grab at power and fame have plenty of competition for their desires. We saw there in verse, 41? When the 10 heard it, why were the 10 displeased? Why were they upset? Because they thought someone was going to sneak in ahead of them, right? It wasn't that they didn't want it. They just thought someone else was going to get that position before they did. They thought someone else had the upper hand and was doing something on the sly to get something that they beat them to it. There's plenty of competition. There's plenty of people out there who want the power and the fame. Plenty of people out there who want to be recognized. Number 5, true greatness can be pictured as an inverted pyramid. When you were a kid, did you ever play King of the Mountain? Now, King of the Mountain is a fairly simple game. All it takes is a mountain. And 3 or 4, usually boys, play King of the Mountain. It could be a pile of leaves, it could be just a dirt pile, a pile of gravel. Would not be real good to play King of the Mountain on, but you could. Some kind of mound, and the kids, one of them gets on the top, stands on the top, and he's the king. And what do the other kids do? Try to knock him off. And so they run up the dirt pile and knock him off, and they stand on the top. They're the king of the mountain. And it's just a battle for who can knock who off and who can stand up there. But everyone wants to be the king. When kids play, and my boys were, especially Mark was good about this. They would play, and they would be playing army, they would be playing cowboys and Indians, they'd be playing something where there's has to be a leader, right? I've never seen a group of boys play where nobody wanted to be the leader. Usually, too many people want to be the leader, and too few people want to be the low men on the totem pole. Everyone wants to be the top dog. We come about that naturally. We see it when kids growing up. It's like a pyramid. The king of the mountain, you're on the top. But true greatness is flipped upside down. The person who is the leader is carrying others on their back. They are serving and caring. Number six. True greatness is giving all you have to give. Now this is a tough one. Jesus said, you'll be the chiefest among you, will be the servant of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be ministered unto. He said, I did not come for people to wait upon me. But I came to serve. I came to give my life as a ransom for many. When we use the words giving all, I'd tell you a couple of things I don't mean by that. I mean the statement, true greatness is giving all that you have to give. But I don't mean that giving all is wasting all. I don't mean by giving all that you give without discretion. But it is a life that gives all. I'll tell you an account in my own life. Past few years. Some of you can identify with this perhaps, some of you may not can. John and Cindy McCarty, and I can probably speak more freely that they, since they are not in the room, John I'm sure will listen to the tape, so that's okay. I have seen John and Cindy give of themselves in ways that I have told my wife this. They are being used. They are being abused. The people that they are trying to help do not give a lick about them. They do not care about doing what is right. They only care about the gift. They are being used. They are being abused. I would not do that. I would not let somebody use me. Now, when I make that statement, I would not let somebody use me. What does that tell you about me? It ought to suggest to you that I am filled to the gills with pride. I will not let somebody use me. That's kind of the way I think a lot. Now, I'm not saying that to the extreme that we ought to just let people walk all over us. And we ought not to hold people responsible for their own behavior, their own actions. But most of you know the situation that Susan and I have been in the last year with our grandkids. We had to come to a place where, regardless of whether or not we were being used, we did certain things, in spite of the fact that we were being used, that we were being abused. We did certain things. You know, I had got to a place, and we had got. I don't know if I should speak for Susan if she's this way or not, but I think that we were both sort of alike here. Our kids were grown. Our kids were gone. It was just us. And I was not having to just bust my tail working as hard as I'd worked for the last 30 years. I could kind of relax a little bit, take a day off occasionally if I wanted to. Susan and I could just kind of enjoy sitting on the porch just a swing, you know. And just, I mean, I worked every day, but just the pressure was not there of raising children, of running a crew, guys doing all these things. And I was getting pretty comfortable that way. We enjoyed it. And then we have to take 4 grandkids in. Grandkids that aren't exactly, or they weren't, as disciplined as old Boompa would want them to have been. Y'all know who Boompa is? Is that what the name of the Jimmy Stewart movie that his grandkids don't like their granddad? And I saw, you know, find myself thinking, okay, we've got to do this for a week or two or a month or two or whatever. A week or two, you can see. A month or two gets to be a little longer, and there came a day when I got a burden lifted from me. And it seems like it would be a burden put on you, but it wasn't. It was a burden lifted because I came to the point where I willingly gave myself to this type of scenario. I may have to raise these 4 kids for the rest of their life until they're grown. I may have to exhaust everything that I have set aside. I may have to spend it all to provide for them. I may have to work until I drop dead and end up penniless to meet their needs. I may be used. I may be abused. And coming to the place where that is okay, where you embrace that. Is a burden lifted. Giving your all. I want to read Isaiah 53, and then I'm going to close with a poem by Amy Carmichael. As I read Isaiah 53, I want you to ask yourself, what does this describe? Does this describe a great person? Does this describe someone who is seeking for fame? Isaiah 53, I'm going to read the whole chapter. Who hath believed our report? And to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so opened he not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment. And who shall declare his generation? For he was cut off out of the land of the living. For the transgression of my people was he stricken. And he made his grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. You notice the repetition of his mouth. Letting things come. Letting evil come. Letting abuses come without answering. Verse 10, yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed. He shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see the travail of his soul, and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore will I divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he hath poured out his soul unto death. He was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many, made intercession for the transgressors. Who is that speaking of? Jesus, right? Never named in Isaiah 53 who that is talking about, but we can see, we recognize enough things there to know without a doubt that that is speaking of Jesus. Jesus is talking with James and John. They are wanting to be great. They're wanting to be famous. They're wanting to be known. They're wanting people to look up to them. They're wanting a position of power. But Jesus said, no, here is the way greatness comes. Giving of yourself. Listen to this poem. Hast thou no scar? No hidden scar on foot or side or hand? I hear thee sung as mighty in the land. I hear them hail thy bright ascendant star. Hast thou no scar? Hast thou no wound? Yet I was wounded by the archers, spent, leaned me against a tree to die, and rent by ravening beasts that compassed me, I swooned. Hast thou no wound? No wound? No scar? Yes, as the master shall the servant be, and pierced are the feet that follow me. But thine are whole. Can he have followed far who has no wound, no scar? I think that as we follow Christ, if we follow him rightly, there will be greatness in our servitude. There will be wounds, there will be scars. But our life will be given and will count for him. Let's pray. Father, would you help us to recognize the evil pride that lurks within our souls, our hearts. God, help us to never give up resisting that ugly pride. God, may we find great delight and fulfillment and fellowship walking with you even in your suffering.